Now let's do a non-uplifting intro this time.
does it mean it has to be the opposite of uplifting or just not uplifting?
It's just going to start like this.
I'm hobo CEO, hobo CEO. My company is wherever I go. I'm hobo CEO. I'm hobo CEO.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers or no trousers at all.
I remember always being irritated or even intimidated by this common precept concept that you should follow your passion. Of kind of feeling, having this sense of guilt that I either hadn't found what my passion was,
mm-hmm.
or was like doing something that was easier than following my passion, and felt guilty for not following my passion, which might be like a real...
Because you're like, you feel like you're kind of like a fraud. You mean that?
That's or what I felt like I'm kind of, yeah. Or like maybe I'm just doing the kind of comfortable thing.
Okay.
Rather than doing, you know, becoming a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a long time, I was really serious about making a musician career.
Mm-hmm.
I've always kind of had trouble with this idea of following your passion. But then I've really had a penny drop moment when we started talking about alignment, because I don't think it necessarily has to be this big, incredible thing, which, like, you know, you use the word excited in Twitter and you kind of talk in a hurried voice and mm-hmm. you smile and you know, just like what I was saying when I was doing the sentence game, that was my passion. Although passion wouldn't really be the word I'd use, because I wasn't like, I don't know. I wasn't like in that sort of, I know what it is. It's because when you often, this follow your passion, follow your purpose type of message is delivered by somebody who's kind of being really sort of, what's the word? Emphatic, excited, and noisy about it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got this association that's what passion is, you know. And we've all had feelings like that. I've had kind of great belly laugh moments and found things really enjoyable and really loved it, like kite surfing or whatever. But coming back to my middle original point, this kind of penny drop thing I had when I realized that what I was doing with the sentence game was...
Can you quickly, just very briefly, explain the sentence game?
I shall explain the sentence game. Basically, there's a game that you play on a piece of paper.
And you didn't play it, you created it, right?
I created it.
A version of it.
I made an online version of this game.
That should be
It's clear. A silly word game that you play with your friends. Go to sentence-game.com and you'll see what I made. But I created this online version of a game that I was playing with my friends.
Yeah.
And it was really funny. And the original game was really funny. This is why I wanted to make it online, so we could play when we were not together. And... as I was saying to you, this was my idea. This was my example of alignment, because there was nothing that could stop me from making this website, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't want any money for it. I didn't kind of care if people used it. I just wanted it so me and my friends could play it,
because
mm-hmm. it was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I couldn't stop myself from doing it. It's like I needed no psyching up or anything. And I wouldn't really use the word passion to sort of describe what was going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But now I realize this idea of kind of following your passion, following your purpose, actually what I was doing with the sentence game kind of fits that much better, because it didn't involve like some kind of great striving or some kind of real, I don't know, it was just really simple. I really enjoyed doing it, and it's the only thing that I wanted to do. And so yeah.
Now, quickly, the follow your passion meme for maybe seems to be highly discussed. There's books, blogs, blog posts, and people on both sides of the discussion. Some people seem to propagate that following your passion is what you really should do. And if you remember when we did the debrief of DC Berlin,
yeah,
that was one of the things you took away from the talks of
Mark Manson and Benny Lewis.
And Benny Lewis, because a major part of their recipe for business success seemed to be following their own account. And that's an interesting part, because when people are successful, they tend to look back at what they did and somehow make this very simple cause-effect connection.
Yeah.
And they tend to think that what they did kind of led to their success, which might be true, but might not necessarily be true.
Yeah,
it depends. If we would look at it scientifically, we would have to say, well, if somebody else does exactly the same thing, do they get the same kind of result?
Yeah, following advice from people who are successful is tricky. Maybe they were successful for reasons they didn't realize. Maybe it's only successful in some specific circumstances. But, you know, we all look at them and we're thinking, he's got something that I want, or she's got something that I want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested to know how they got it.
Yeah.
But they might not know how they got it.
They might not know. And I just read a tweet today, very smart tweet, especially since I really dug into teaching and learning as basically like a result or as an exit point to my musical career.
Mm.
It was kind of like the thing that then caught my attention. How do people teach and learn, and why do some people get so much better little practice than others with that do a lot of practice, for example? And the tweet said, if we ask somebody with a specific skill to basically teach that skill or how they do what they do, we most of the time forget that teaching is another skill. You know, you can look at somebody who does something really well, a specific skill, and you can think, whoa, if I want to learn this, I got to ask this person. But it's oftentimes neglected that these people are maybe really bad teachers.
Yeah.
That's something that I found in my musical career. A lot of the times, you know, like brilliant musicians, but if you ask them how they do and how they came to doing what they do, they are quite clueless. And just because you ask them, they start explaining things, and it might be the wrong causes, the wrong reasons that they give you.
Mm.
So yeah, we're looking at successful people. It might be in order to be successful, because yeah, there might be a very deep biological kind of programming that we give them more credibility.
Mm.
But there are some good, really good trainers and coaches. I mean, like for example, in sports, that are not and have not been excellent athletes.
Mm.
So what I find funny is that for the question of whether or not to follow your passion with business, you can find really good arguments for both cases. So you can have people that totally destroy the idea of follow your passion. They will write a nice blog post about how this is total bullshit and it's for pussies, and you should just get to the work, do the work, fight. There's a whole different kind of metaphors that comes along with not following your passion. And then there's another very attractive bundle of metaphors that comes with following your passion. Like it's easy, it's about states of flow. As you said, you can't stop yourself, and so on and so forth.
So I think I've got a neat way of tying this into alignment. I hypothesize that maybe it's the idea of following your passion, it's quite a passive endeavor. It's not a particularly active endeavor. Like my example with the sentence game.
Yeah.
I didn't really think, oh, this is what I really want to be doing with my life. I'm going to quit my job and make the sentence game.
Yes.
I just started doing it. I wasn't thinking about it at all. It just came to me, you know. It's just what I wanted to do. It was very passive. There was no kind of conscious sort of decision in my mind to start doing it. And so all this kind of business about like the sense of guilt when I hear people saying, follow your passion. And I'm thinking, oh, I should have kept trying to be a heavy metal guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
I should have kept practicing, you know, all that kind of feeling. I think, no, it's like, it's much simpler than like that. It's probably more about taking things away, which is stopping you doing from the things that you're aligned with, which are the things that you're passionate about. I guess we're getting stuck in meanings, and this is one of the problems with talking, is you're limited by the actual words that you use. And like the idea of something being aligned, something you like doing, and the idea of passion, like passion evokes this idea of something that's very sort of fiery and red and almost sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like me doing something that I enjoyed doing, it just sounds a bit too sort of simple and easy and passive.
Yes.
But I'd argue it's basically the same thing, or at least the kind of wisdom from this idea of following your passion, it's more about that simple thing that I was doing rather than about the sort of sexual fiery thing. Because it's like, I guess it goes both ways. Sometimes, you know, you can be really fired up about things, but it's just, you know, you'll just be doing it anyway. It's like, it's not like you'll need to kind of so aggressively pursue it. It's like, it's, you will just pursue it. And so I think it's this idea of, it's like a more of a passive thing, and you've got to more figure out what's in your way from kind of pursuing it, taking things away which are stopping you from doing your passions or things that you like.
It also kind of reminds me, what you're saying kind of reminds me of another kind of like discussion that's going on, has been going on the through the media, like on the internets. I don't know where exactly the discussion has taken place, but I somehow I've been following it. And there's this a woman, I think she's called Susan something. She wrote the book Quiet, and it's by Susan Cain. I was gonna say Susan McCain, but I see Susan McCain might be the wife in Die Hard.
That
doesn't matter. So Susan Cain wrote this book about the power of introverts in a world that can't stop talking. And I just wanted to say that what you just said about following your passion in the red, fiery kind of way, that sounds way more like the, you know, like tweets that have words like super excited and that kind of stuff. So it sounds more like the, you know, it's a little bit like, even though it's a different domain, but it sounds to me a little bit like the discussion or back and forth between being an extrovert and being an introvert, and how introverts are oftentimes misrepresented, and that there's a different kind of quality and skill set that they have, but it's not that super excited. Yeah. So that's not why it draws so much attention. But here's following your passion, that's all cool. So, but here's something very, really interesting. I mean, with the sentence game, you did this and it was probably framed as a hobby, right?
Yeah.
So you know, like a couple of episodes ago, we talked about my little coffee set. And I'm really passionate about coffee. I mean, I walk around, you know this, I go around collecting different coffee samples from different high fancy coffee roastery places and so on. And I try them out and I measure shit. And whenever I do coffee with other people, they are like, how the hell, why does he put so much effort into this? And then everybody's super excited, is really loving the coffee as a result. But here's the thing, it's a passion, but it's still a hobby. I haven't yet
you've not monetized
it. Opened a coffee shop. But but I mean, that's an interesting question. So be it the coffee game, be it the sentence game or making a good coffee and spending time and money and efforts in it. So what can we say about the, this is obviously unprepared, but what is there to say about a possible transition? So how would we combine possibly or reconcile something that is, that comes easy, that is more like, it sounds like a female approach, like it's more like conceived, it's not actively approached, it's more like, but how would you, or what ideas do we have about, you know, getting that together? Like, could you do a passion and a business and quote unquote monetize or whatever, get professional about it?
Well, I've got two conceptual things to introduce straight off the bat.
Cool.
One is there's this idea of via negativa, which is the idea of looking for things to take away rather than looking for things to add.
Mm-hmm.
So as I made a reference to it earlier, looking at the things which are maybe blocking you from doing the things that you're quote-unquote passionate about, or let's just say interested in or aligned with.
Yes.
So that might be... I think if you're too stressed.
Or if you're just too busy. I mean, like, if you have no... If there's no room for anything new to come in, if you're like, you know...
So you might be in a situation, you're really busy, you've got multiple projects on, you read a blog post that says, follow your passion, and you think, oh shit, I really should be following my passion. You can't because you're too busy. You've just like, you've got to kind of chill out and slow down and like let that kind of passion kind of come naturally. It's like the idea of an aphrodisiac, something that's meant to make you more aroused.
Use them all the time.
Exactly. Well, you don't need to. You're the king in the bedroom, the emperor. But the not with me, incidentally. We're just podcast buddies. That's as far as it goes. So far. But I remember basically the active property in aphrodisiacs is basically they just make you relax. And it made me realize
that's interesting.
The you know, it's not like it does something to you that gives you a hard on or makes you excited. Yeah. It just chills you out. And then naturally you're with somebody that you're interested in or fancy or love or whatever. And it just happens naturally.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's the most natural thing in the world to get it on. You know, we're basically gene reproduction machines. Getting it on is like the most fundamental thing. So it's more about like taking things out the way of a natural process happening. So that's like the first thing, is this idea of via negativa, like taking away things which are holding you back from what you would naturally be doing. The other thing, bullet point number two,
yeah.
is we're riffing it today. There's no notes. So point number two is actually there is something to be gained from that kind of excited, you know, activated energy as well. You know, there's I've had times in my life where I've been really super motivated and super kind of, what's the word? I think activated is the word I'm going to stick with. Going with activated.
Okay.
And that's quite different from this other concept of saying where you're kind of taking things out of the way. But again, how can you get activated is perhaps what we should say. And I think in a sense, if you take the things out of the way which are holding you back, you'll probably naturally be activated. You'll probably naturally find a sort of enthusiasm and a passion, especially if you're aligned, especially if you're kind of doing something that fits. It's just kind of, it naturally happens. You're naturally excited. You don't have to sort of, you know, tweet about it. You are excited. You don't have to do these silly press releases where you kind of get a like a voiceover actor with a really excited voice. It's just like that's how you feel naturally. Yeah. But then there's also, I've also noticed that you can actually kickstart this kind of thing as well. And that can often come from like a negative motivation. Maybe you're stuck in a situation you really don't like and you get to a point where you just snap and you make something happen. You book that flight to Thailand or whatever it is. And then like that act of really changing something because you kind of out of desperation, you went and changed something. That can also catapult you into this place of excitement. Maybe something kind of holding you back from acting, maybe you're afraid or something, but you get to that threshold where you just have the position you're in is more uncomfortable than what it is that you do, which kind of takes you into that other state. I always remember that in the 4-hour work week, Tim Ferriss makes reference to being frustrated and feeling like taking an Uzi into McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I kind of get the sense that maybe, you know, he experienced that similar sort of thing. He was really kind of in a difficult, frustrated position and like took a big step.
And two quick improvised bullet points for me.
So this is 3 and 4?
Yes, kind of. I mean, there's a lot of interesting ways how you can divide the world into, there's only two kinds of people. Which obviously there's not two kinds of people, but it's a nice framing to, you know, sort stuff. And if you sort stuff that way and you have a lot of those sorting mechanisms, you can come to a more complex picture than just saying somebody is either or, and so it's contextual. But very key concept that comes out of, I think comes out of NLP and motivation science is there's people are either motivated towards or away from. These are the two kinds of people. So you have, generally speaking, you have people that will talk about what they want and where they want to go These are the toward motivated people. And then you have people that are, their only way to motivate themselves is to think about what they don't have, what they want to stop doing, and so on and so forth, which sometimes is good. You might easier get to a breaking point, like where you jump.
And so can you reiterate that? Their motivation is...
away from. So let's say you ask people like, so what do you want? So what do you want in a job, in a job interview, like in personal resources or whatever? Mm-hmm. Some people will tell you, why have you chosen this job? They will tell you, well, I love to work with people. I make a lot of money in this kind of job, and I have the flexibility to decide blah, 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 blah. So that might be the reasons they give you. So and another person, you ask the same question. You ask them, why did you choose that job and why do you like it? And even if you ask them, why do you like it? They will tell you something like, I really wanted to get this job because I was just fed up following other people's orders, or I quit my job and I became an entrepreneur because I didn't want to work for other people. I had no motivation to build other people's assets. And so
it's like in your the Cartesian model that you noticed, it's the looking at things that are not there.
Yeah. And these are the things they are moving away from. Like some people want to get rich and others just don't want to get poor. Mm. And you will find that some of the most, for example, financial successful people are those that are really, you could say, worst case oriented. They are really motivating themselves because they are afraid that something goes wrong. Mm. And in certain instances, this is the more useful approach. Mm. Like, for example, if you want to be a security expert, it's kind of your job to generate as many bad case scenarios as you can. What else could happen? And what else could happen? Yeah. And how bad could that be? And so on and so forth. So I'm not saying that's not useful. I'm just saying there's these two. And
so that was point three.
And now coming back to the alignment thing, tying this into your idea of taking away things so that there's more room to basically conceive or, you know, let things come to you. Another thing is in coaching, in the area of personal development, it's not that people really jump states. Mm. They more like they have to progress through states. Mm. So if somebody is depressed, you cannot meet them and make them be enthusiastic in 5 minutes. Mm. Like they have to progress through certain stages, basically take certain steps, intermediate steps to get there, which I think is kind of confirming what you're saying about the via negativa, because it's not necessarily like a jump moment. Mm. It's more like, you know, you take things away and then it becomes more and more easy. And once you are kind of like over the hill, then you might even get the ball rolling so that more and more stuff just keeps on happening. So alignment, the question that we basically asked that brought us to the topic of alignment, and we're not talking about alignment necessarily in a very spiritual sense. Mm. So we're just talking, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking about doing something that is closer to what you are drawn to do, what comes to you in a kind of an easy way, something that kind of fits your skill set, your character, your personality, and that kind of stuff. Which doesn't mean that you can change and maybe, you know, evolve to whatever, but being in alignment, even where at whatever point you are, might be a good basis for that.
Yeah.
I think we kind of came from the question, how much struggle should it really be? If you do things and they're not working, and for how long do you have to keep on working and force yourself to, you know, that kind of stuff. What do you...
It was coming from the chap that you know, sort of saying, well, are you working 10-hour days? You know,
right.
Are you working the max, basically?
Right. So I had this discussion with, maybe that's good. I had this discussion where somebody asked me if I'm working 10, 12, 15 hours, 14 hours a day. And I told him, no, I don't. I don't feel that I have the energy at the moment. And also, this is kind of an ongoing topic between Chris and me, like since we met, is it really possible and necessary to work and be productive so many hours a day? And we're more coming from a position where we maybe we're just justifying and rationalizing our own laziness.
But no, this is where this alignment came in.
Yeah,
so this is sort of I'm kind of arguing that once you find something that you're quote unquote aligned with, actually no, there's no need to use quotes. Let's not worry about the spiritual movement's hijacking the word alignment. Once you're kind of doing something that you're aligned with, it's sort of self-fueling. It becomes quite effortless to do 10-hour days. I have definitely been in periods of this in my life where I had to kind of stop myself from working rather mm-hmm. than force myself to work. Mm-hmm. So, this is kind of where it came in. We were like, well, we're struggling to do, you know, even 4-hour days. And mm-hmm. it's kind of because we're doing things that we're like finding difficult, we don't know about, we're not enjoying it. It's like we're on the left foot kind of thing. It's like there's nothing kind of pulling us into it. It's like we're really pushing it every step of the way.
There's friction, right? Mm. And friction is the thing that makes working hard, whether it's 1 hour, 2 hours, or 10 hours a day. And the question is, where does the friction come from?
Yeah.
This friction can come from very different places. It can come from a kind of laziness, but I think it can also come from doing something you're not feeling comfortable with, or maybe that's doing something that you don't really feel it's you. Like friction that comes out of like being like, for example, not honest about things, that kind of stuff. Mm. Even like Taylor mentioned in we're gonna link to his post. He had this nice blog post that went a little viral the other day, which was titled "Was I a Pussy Today?" And he talked about like having to do sales for the new valet app that they that they created. And he said like he has to talk to people and kind of convince them, but he really struggles because he and doing the sales calls because. It was something like he hasn't really seen the app yet, or it hasn't really been proven yet, or something like that. So I think that's the kind of friction that is not necessarily laziness. It's also not like the, you know, the kind of hiding.
Mm.
It's more like sometimes it's hard because you didn't have the fundamentals to make something more frictionless.
Mm.
Because if you're convinced of something, it's obviously easier to convince other people about it. And
I'm going to come up with a counterpoint to this.
Mm-hmm.
I remember from my good old days picking up girls before I met Cowdy. And I'm sure this counts quite well for sales. You know, you can spend ages waiting for the right moment to start an interaction
with
a girl.
Right.
And I think the same with the sales. You know, maybe you kind of wait till you really believe in the thing you're doing. I'm not sure how this metaphor pans out in sales, but certainly one thing I noticed is what was important for me was not kind of waiting for the right moment. It was taking action. It was making sure that I did it again and again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it changed my state. It changed the way that I was. I always remember one of my friends who was doing it. His thing was he would always aim to crash and burn 3 times before he actually could start it. So he deliberately, the first kind of, let's say if it was sales calls, the first 3 calls he would make, he would aim to fail or expect to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of took a bit of the pressure off. And then, you know, he's kind of taking action. He's kind of in the swing of things. Yeah, so kind of countering your point a bit, whilst I do, you know, whilst it is a very valid point, friction can really make these situations difficult. There's also a value in getting used to being able to overcome friction.
So so you could maybe try to solve or take away the friction in some cases.
Yeah.
It's hard to determine, abstractly speaking, making rules about which cases is which. And in other cases, as you're saying, you can kind of trick yourself to get over the friction, especially about the friction that comes like when you haven't started yet and so on and so forth.
Hmm.
And adding another little point about motivation and strategies, it's really interesting. Some people that have... If you find yourself having a hard time motivating yourself to do things, here's something that might help. Think about the outcome rather than the process. Mm. People that that tend to have a hard time motivating themselves, they also tend to getting stuck and thinking about the process. So, for example, you think about cleaning up the house.
Mm.
So when you think about, should I clean the house now, you think about all the things you have to do, the vacuuming, the getting, the and so on and so forth. And that might be really demotivating. But if you think, and other people, they look in the house and they just imagine, they're hallucinating how beautiful everything, how would look once it's cleaned up. So, and that's where they start. They don't even, you know, bother themselves thinking about what has to be done to get there.
Yeah.
They're just thinking like 30 minutes from now or whatever, an hour from now, this is going to be clean. Yeah. And that's it sounds really obvious if you tell it to somebody, but if you have a hard time motivating yourself about something, try to remember that and ask yourself and kind of like go meta on yourself and observe what it is that you imagine, what kind of pictures you're making and what are you saying to yourself.
It's a no-brainer. Not putting your attention on the kind of negative, putting your attention on the positive. I would add to that another point. Don't know how many bullet points we've done today. I'm sure we've got some more left. But the next one I'd say is doing things with awareness, doing things with mindfulness. So cleaning the house is a great example.
Yeah.
Because you can clean the house and think, oh, fuck, this is really boring. You know, scrubbing the toilet or whatever it is. Hoovering or something.
Yeah.
Where maybe it takes quite a long time. Rather than being kind of irritated by the fact that you're stuck hoovering, turn it into a meditation. Turn it into an exercise of being aware. You know, focus on just the feeling of hoovering. Focus on having a relaxed posture. Focus on your breathing. You know, turn it into an opportunity to boost your mindfulness, boost your awareness, to meditate, to relax. So, you know, that's my next point, my next bullet point.
And I have to add on that, since you brought that up, like I don't do these things routinely, like at a certain time or whatever, but I try to basically make them fit my day. For example, if you're working at the computer after a certain amount of time, you want to take a break. These are good opportunities to, you know, get some washing done, do some.
Yeah.
These are great breaks. Like they, you don't have to think about them. You can like your mind can just go wherever it wants to, and you don't even have to be super mindful. You can just basically let go a little bit.
So maybe we should call this the title of this podcast. Alignment and motivation. Maybe we should recap on the points, because I think like half of them were sort of motivation related. So we've got that first one, the idea of taking via negativa. Then we've got the idea of actively changing state, maybe from some sort of negative motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Then you made two points.
One was about be aware of whether you are motivated towards or away from.
Yeah.
It's also super interesting in terms of leadership. Like if you have people on your team, some people are motivated away from. If you tell them what could be achieved by doing X, Y, and Z, it just may be totally meaningless to them.
Yeah.
And the other way around. Like, okay. But that's just a side note. So you yourself and other people, and you can listen to people talk, they will basically, it's observable. They are either motivated away from or they're motivated towards. And I said that there's like emotions, basically, they are not, you cannot arbitrarily jump from one emotion to the other, but they are connected. They are, for lack of a better description, you could say they are kind of like on a string or on a scale. There's a model that's called the emotional tone scale, which kind of like sorts different emotional states as to, you know, from the most negative to the most positive and what comes after what.
Then there was the idea of friction, which I guess it's a little bit similar to the first point, but it's a variation, the idea of taking away things which are causing friction.
And we also in the beginning mentioned that people that are successful, if you ask them how they did it and what they did to achieve that, they might contribute or their success to things that they did just because they did them. But it's not necessarily that there's a cause, like it's the difference between correlation and causation.
Correlation and causation.
Yeah.
So it's like reading the article, The Habits of Rich People.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, if I have those habits, then I'll become rich. But it's not. That's a correlation. It's not a causation.
Yeah.
It's like just because rich people fly first class. It doesn't make them rich.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
If you start flying first class, it's no guarantee that you'll become rich.
You just have to be a little cautious about that.
So anyway, you're basically saying like successful people, or maybe somebody who's doing something you want to do or got something you want to have, they don't necessarily know how they got there.
And they might be skilled, but they might totally lack the skill of teaching the skill they have. Yeah. So that's a problem.
So, marvelous. Well, I think that's a wrap, Nico.
See you guys soon. We, as a last note, we've decided on some people's demands to up our game and put out more podcast episodes.
Weekly podcast episodes.
Aiming at weekly podcast episodes. If you have interesting topics.
Come on, we've got the lucky crystal. We can do the weekly podcasts.
That's true.
The alignment.
Now that we got the magic power crystal,
yeah,
we probably should be...
Now we've got the power of nonsense and alignment, we're going to be bashing them out every week. It's a done deal, Nico.
So see you soon. And join us on the Hobo Hangouts. We're going to post them on hoboceo.com/hangouts. Hangout? Hobo Hangout?
Hobo Hangout.
Hobo hyphen Hangout.
Yeah.
And... grab a seat, join us, talk to us. Chris is going to leave to Tokyo soon, so we're going to be in desperate need of having at least weekly hangouts to just catch up, talk a little bit about business and the philosophical implications
of chickens.
See you guys soon.
Later.
Morons, pipe dreams, protons, hunting, leaping, jumping, kite surfing, landing pages, optimization, and supers. Another amazing podcast magic production.